Thanks for joining us today for our Thursday broadcast of Abiding in the Word with Dave Love, Senior Pastor of Calvary Castle Rock. Today we're continuing our study in the book of Exodus. So let's listen in now to Pastor Dave.
Soon your trials will be over.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Calvary Castle Rock. If you need a Bible, raise your hand and we'll place a Bible in your hand. We are going to be, well, in many places. But we will start off here in Exodus chapter 21. We are going through the book of Exodus. And so we have kind of hit on the topic of slavery and slavery in the Bible. And so we've been going over that for 2 weeks. And so this is our third part three series on slavery. And as we go through God's word, if we come up on a difficult topic, we do not skip over it. We dive deep so we have a greater understanding of what slavery is in the Bible. Now, what we do know, it is not. Our first slide here is Exodus 21:16. It states very, very clearly, he who kidnaps a man and sells him, or if he is found in his hand, shall surely be put to death. So the Bible absolutely condemns man-stealing, is what that is. And so when you think about the Atlantic slave trade, which America took part in, was God for that or against it? He was absolutely against it. It was wrong. And so, again, the Bible makes that very, very clear. But Dave, we see slavery in the Bible. Yes, it's not that slavery. It's different. It's more servitude. Okay? And so in Exodus 21, verse 1 and 2, it says, now these are the judgments which you shall set before them. If you buy a Hebrew servant or slave, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh year he shall go out free and pay nothing. Does that sound like the Atlantic slave trade? No. Okay. Why is this person being sold to this other Hebrew? It is because they have fallen into debt. That's why. And so you're going to serve 6 years. And the seventh year, guess what? You go free. All right? So what happens during those 6 years? Hopefully, you learn how to be better with your resources. It's on-the-job training. You work for someone else, so when you're released, you now can be a master over your own goods and will do well with those resources. We read in Deuteronomy 15, our next slide here. If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, you can sell yourself into slavery if you're a Hebrew woman as well, is sold to you and serves you 6 years, then in the seventh year you shall let him go free from you. And when you send him away free from you, you shall not let him go away empty handed. You shall supply him liberally from your flock, from your threshing floor, from your wine press, from what the Lord has blessed you with, you shall give to him. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you there. Therefore, I command you this thing today. What he is saying there says, you're not to treat that fellow Hebrew, that servant, like you were treated in Egypt. That is not the kind of slavery we're talking about here. As a matter of fact, what you're going to do with this person is that when their 6 years is up, you're going to give him everything he needs to be successful when he goes back home on the land in order to manage his land the way that he was supposed to so he doesn't fall in debt again. So you're going to give him flocks, because if you just let him go, okay, I have no money, I have nothing, I'm back on my land. Now where do I get the money to be able to buy flocks? Where do I get the money to buy crops? Where do I get the money to buy the grain to make the crop? You send him out with all that stuff. He has his own little starter kit, you know, to be able to work the land and everything else. That is not the Atlantic slave trade, okay? It is not. Now, we also looked at some other things. As you're a Hebrew slave, guess what? If there is any sort of corporal punishment that would show abuse, guess what? You could go to the judges, and the judges would set you free because of that. All right? So again, this is not the Atlantic slave trade. And nowhere in God's word does he condone that. All right? He's absolutely against it. He's against man stealing. It's wrong. Now, let's go over to Leviticus chapter 25. There's many who texted me during the week and says, Dave, it kind of sounds like, you know, there's permanent slaves here and this and that, and there are. What is that all about? Well, the context, we have to read it in its context, okay? And the context here in chapter 25, starting in verse 1, we have to read verses 1 through 38 before we get into our topic here of slavery, because it builds the context of it all. So here in chapter 25 in verse 1, we read this. It says, and the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, speak to the children of Israel, say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then the land shall keep a Sabbath to the Lord. 6 years you shall sow your fruit, sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather its fruit. But in the seventh year there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath to the Lord. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. What does this sound like right now? It sounds like you work 6 days and the seventh day you rest. It's called the Sabbath. Well, guess what? There's also called the Sabbath of the land or Sabbath of years, which means you work the land, sow to the land, okay? You plant seed in the land for 6 years, but the seventh year, you don't do that. You don't work the land. You let it lay fallow, okay? And then it says here, but in the seventh year, there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath to the Lord. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. What grows of its own accord, of your harvest, you shall not reap nor gather the grapes of your untended vine, for it is the year of rest for the land. For the Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you and your male and female servants, your hired man, and the stranger who dwells with you. For your livestock and the beasts that are in the land, all its produce shall be for food. So guess what? You don't have to work it. Whatever it produces, you can go ahead and partake of that. That'll be more than enough. God will provide. Okay? God will provide. Now, verse 8. You shall count 7 Sabbaths. Of years for yourself, 7 times 7 years, and 7 times 7 Sabbaths of the year shall be to you 49 years. Then you shall cause the trumpet of Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement. You shall make the trumpet to sound throughout all your land, and you shall consecrate the 50th year. Proclaim liberty throughout all the land for all its inhabitants. It shall be Jubilee for you. And each of you shall return to the possession. Each of you shall return to his family. This is the year of Jubilee. You know what Jubilee means? Yippee. Okay. Actually, here's the definition. Yovel in the Hebrew. It means ram's horn. You blow the ram's horn. And when you blow this on the 50th year. Now, I got to step back a little bit. So the moment they get in the land, they're being told to work it for 6 years. Let the seventh year lay fallow. Israel never once did that. Never once did that. So when it came to them being taken into captivity to Babylon, hey, how many years should they be in captivity? Well, they are in captivity 70 years. Why? Because God said, okay, look, you worshiped other gods, you didn't obey me, I'm sending you into captivity, I'm going to remove you from the land for how many years? 70. Why 70? Because they never let the land lay fallow for 490 years. How many years do they owe God for that? 70. 70. That's why they went into captivity. You can read about that in 2 Chronicles chapter 36. Tells you that's the reason, okay? So they never once let the land lay fallow, okay? And in the year of Jubilee, also supposed to let the land lay fallow. Now think about this for a moment. You have the every seventh year supposed to lay fallow. Well, in the 49th year, before the year of Jubilee, it lays fallow. And then on the 50th year, it also lays fallow. So for 2 years in a row, you need to let the land lay fallow, okay? All business transactions, everything that happens on the time of Jubilee, we're going to read here in verse 11, it says, right here, it says, or in verse 10, you shall consecrate the 50th year, proclaim liberty throughout all the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be Jubilee for you, and each of you shall return to his possession. Each of you shall return to his family. That 50th year shall be Jubilee to you. In it you shall neither sow nor reap what grows in its own accord, nor gather the grapes of your untended vine. For it is Jubilee, it shall be holy to you. You shall eat its produce from the field. In this year of Jubilee, each of you shall return to his possession. So if you're a slave somewhere, guess what? You're free. You're free. If you sold some land to someone, guess what? It goes back to you. Okay? It's a year of Jubilee. For it is Jubilee, it shall be holy to you, you shall eat its produce from the field. In the year of Jubilee, each of you shall return to the possession. If you sell anything to your neighbor or by your neighbor's hand, you shall not oppress one another. According to the number of years after the Jubilee, you shall buy from your neighbor, and according to the number of years or crops, he shall sell to you. According to the number multitude of years, you shall increase its price, and according to the fewer number of years, you shall diminish its price, for he sells to you according to the number of the years of crops. Therefore, you shall not oppress one another, but you shall fear your God, for I am the Lord your God. So if a family, every tribe has been given land throughout all of Israel, okay? Let's say your family's not big enough to work all the land that God has given you. You can sell your land or part of your land to another family member that might, to another fellow Hebrew that might want to expand their business and everything else. Hey, our crops are doing great. We would like to have more land to be able to do more crops, and you're kind of going, fine, why don't you buy some of my land? Awesome, you could do that, okay? You could do that. But in Jubilee, guess what? The land goes back to the original owner. Now, if there is 45 years until Jubilee, okay, that land that you want to buy is going to be more expensive. Because you got 45 years to work it, to make a profit off of it, okay? But if there's 3 years left before Jubilee, how much are you going to be able to sell your land for? Not very much, okay? Why? Because in 3 years it's going back. Can you even produce enough to make a profit within 3 years? Probably not. So you're not going to have a whole lot of people knocking at that point. So every transaction, you have Jubilee in mind. It's eventually going to go back to the original owner. It's eventually going to go back to them. Now, in verse 18, it says, so you shall observe my statutes, keep my judgment, perform them, and you will dwell in the land in safety. Then the land will yield its fruit. You will eat your fill, dwell there in safety. And if you say, what shall we eat in the seventh year, since we shall not sow nor gather our produce, then I will command my blessing on you in the sixth year. It'll bring forth produce enough for 3 years. So again, because you have 2 years in a row that you're not going to sow your field, guess what? God is going to bless so much in the sixth year, okay, that it'll be more than enough to cover you in the seventh year and then the eighth year, which is Jubilee, or that 50th year, okay? And you shall sow in the eighth year and eat old produce until the ninth year. Until its produce comes in, you shall eat of the old harvest. So basically God's saying, trust me, I'll provide enough for that year before the year is supposed to lay fallow that I will cover it. And so they're supposed to trust God in that, and they never once did that. Never once did that. Even in the year of Jubilee, they still set everybody free, everything went back, but they never once let the land lay fallow. Verse 23, the land shall not be sold permanently, for the land is mine. For you are strangers and sojourners with me, And in the land of your possession, you shall grant redemption of the land. If one of your brethren becomes poor, has sold some of his possession, and if his redeeming relatives come to redeem it, then he may redeem what his brother sold. Or if the man has no one to redeem it but himself, becomes able to redeem it, then let him count the years since its sale and restore the remainder to the man to whom he sold it, and that he may return his possession. But if he is not able to have it restored to himself, then what was sold shall remain in the hand of him who bought it until the year of Jubilee, and in Jubilee it shall be released, and he shall return to his possession. So again, if someone sells part of his land and then wants to get that land back, he can redeem it himself. There is a price tag on that, okay? He can redeem himself, or a family member, a near kinsman can redeem it, but if they can't, at Jubilee, it all goes back to him. It all goes back to that family. In verse 29, it says, if a man sells a house in a walled city, then he may redeem it within a whole year after it is sold. Within a full year, he may redeem it. But if it is not redeemed within the space of a full year, then the house in the walled city shall belong permanently to him who bought it. Throughout his generation, it shall not be released in the Jubilee. So little villages that kind of pop up within the lands, okay? Inside those villages, inside the walled villages, I should say, inside of those, if someone comes and buys that property and then a year later you don't redeem it, they get to keep it. The person who owned it before doesn't get it back at Jubilee. Why is that? I don't know. Nobody knows. Now, there are those who will say this, and I shared this last night. I said, hey, you guys who want to run this down, please run down. And many of them did, and they sent me things this morning basically saying what I just said. Okay, I said that myself, when I looked through it, as we're going to get into the stranger in the land and the foreigner that comes, and strangers and foreigners from other nations can come and reside in Israel. God allows that, okay? Well, where are they going to go? They can't just be a squatter and just kind of squat on your land and put up a house there. No, you can't do that in the land of Israel. So where is it that they go? I would submit to you that they go inside these walled villages, that this is a place of commerce. This is going to be a place where maybe the blacksmith is. This is a place where maybe the trading of wares, a place where you can get fine linen, all those kind of things. And there's other nations that probably specialize in certain things, whether it's bringing spices or whatever into your town, that's where they would trade. Maybe that's where they would set up shop to do something to actually live there in Israel. And so someone sent me a commentary by Matthew Henry and someone else that seemed to suggest the same thing. I didn't read them ahead of time. That's just kind of what my thinking was. That's kind of their thinking as well. And so it's awesome to know some great men of God think like I do. That's awesome. But we don't really know. But as we get into this, God says that the stranger and the foreigner can live in the land. Well, where are they going to live? It seems to me the only place that would be available to be would be inside a village, okay? That there's probably some homes that, and so what you would have inside a village is that you would have a place that you do business, and above that is where you would live. So there's probably some spaces that they have allowed or made for other people to come into the land in order to trade, give their skill that maybe Israel doesn't have, probably some artisans coming as well, pottery, other things that they're going to need in the land. And so that is possibly a place where they can be, okay? He goes on and he says in verse 29, it says, if a man sells a house in a walled village, then he may redeem it within a whole year after it is sold. Within a full year, he may redeem it. But if he is not redeemed with a space of a full year, then the house in the walled city shall become permanently to him who bought it. Throughout the generation shall not be released in Jubilee. So again, I think that is kind of where the stranger, the foreigner, can now live there within the land. However, the houses of villages which have no wall around them shall be counted as the fields of the country. Why? Because the land belongs to the Lord. and you cannot give away that land. And they may be redeemed and shall be released in jubilee. Nevertheless, the cities of the Levites and the houses in the cities of their possession, the Levites may redeem at any time. If a man purchases a house from the Levites, then the house that was sold in the city of his possession shall be released in jubilee, for the houses in the cities of the Levites are their possession among the children of Israel. The Levites were kind of scattered throughout the land, but they were given certain cities that they were to live in. And even if they sold one of their houses at that time, in jubilee it goes back to them, okay? But the field of the common land of their cities may not be sold, for it is their perpetual possession. There's also a common area for the Levites, for them to put crops and things like that. That can never be sold, okay? Now, verse 35, if one of your brethren becomes poor, falls into poverty among you, then you shall help him like a stranger or a sojourner that he may live with you. Take no usury or interest from him, but fear your God that your brother may live with you. You shall not lend him your money for usury, nor lend him your food at a profit. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God. So again, if you're going to lend money to one of your Hebrew brethren, you're not to charge them interest. Okay? You're not to charge them interest. Now, verse 39 here, okay, it says, and if one of your brethren who dwells by you becomes poor and sells himself to you, you shall not compel him to serve as a slave, meaning a bondservant. That is voluntary. You can't compel him to always be your servant, okay? You can't compel him to do that. As a hired servant and a sojourner shall be with you and shall serve you until the year of Jubilee. And then he shall depart from you, he and his children with him, and he shall return to his own family. He shall return to the possession of his father. So again, the same thing's going on here. Guy gets into debt. He sells himself to you. Don't compel him to serve you forever. It's the normal 6 years and the 7 year he goes free. Okay? And so he's that normal indentured servant that we read about in Exodus 21, verses 1 and 2. He works 6 years, seventh year he goes free, unless the year of Jubilee comes before the end of his 6 years of service. Guess what? He's only able to serve three, four, because Jubilee comes. Guess what? He's able to go free. And yet, if he goes free, you're also supposed to give him what he needs in order to be able to do well on his own land. You don't leave him empty-handed. And so he goes on here and he tells us there, for they are my servants whom I bought out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as slaves. You shall not rule over him with rigor, but you shall fear your God. Now comes the tricky verses, the ones none of us like to read, but it's there. And what does it mean? Verse 44, as for your male and female slaves whom you may have from the nations that are around you, from them you may buy male and female slaves. Moreover, you may buy the children of the strangers who dwell among you and their families who are with you, which they beget in your land, and they shall become your property. And you may take them as an inheritance for your children after you, to inherit them as a possession. They shall be your permanent slaves. We will meet in the golden city in
Jerusalem. Well, that concludes today's edition of Abiding in the Word with Pastor Dave Love. Tune in tomorrow as we continue our study in the book of Exodus. If you're in Castle Rock or the surrounding area, we'd love to have you visit. You'll find us right near the actual Castle Rock on the corner of 5th and Woodlands. Our weekend services are Saturdays at 5 p.m. and Sundays at 8:30 a.m. as well as 11 a.m. High schoolers will meet during the 8:30 service and junior high students during the 11 a.m. service. Child care is available during all our weekend services. For more information about us or this radio ministry, please visit our website at calvarycr.com or download our free mobile app from the Apple App Store or Google Play. You can also call the church office at 303-663-2514. Thank you for tuning in to this radio station today. Until our next time together, we want to encourage you to always be abiding in the Word of God.